there, White Sox fans. Brett Valentini here, lucky enough to host another Sox Pop on the Farm podcast. This is number 51. We're focusing this year. We're just doing sort of themes week to week with each team. We're back to the Charlotte Knights and Jonathan Lee in Charlotte once again. Only slightly less MacGyvering for this podcast this time around, but again, the product, the look.
I was ready for you today, Brett.
I didn't get to walk with you to the park.
One thing I'm worried about is I have a little bit of an allergy issue, but I have my tissues, my tissue box is right here.
All right.
If I have a sneezing episode, I'm ready to go.
Okay. And it'll make the outtakes at the end of the year. So perfect. Absolutely. You know, we are a point and shoot podcast, so it's dangerous. You get a sneezing fit, it might just stay in, but that's a good time to squeeze in our commercial break. So the point is, if there is a sneezing fit on either one of our sides, I got a little allergy myself, and we go immediately to commercial, yeah, don't freak out. It's just, you know, we're trying to make use of our time. Yes, Jonathan, off of the IL, brief one-day IL, brief MacGyvering for this podcast, but we're back and ready to talk some Charlotte Knights. You've observed plenty already. Rain out here and there. I mean, at least the end of this last series got rained out. Mm-hmm. The team itself started rough, and playing the Norfolk Tides is not going to help you there. But rebounding at this point to 8-12, I would argue probably better than folks would have expected maybe going in. Overall assessment, 3-5 in this last series. Of the team itself, you know, AAA is, I guess, by nature now sort of a level in flux. But given all that, you know, what have you seen from these guys, and impressed or disappointed?
No, I'm impressed. I don't remember the last time the Knights won a series. It's been a while. And, you know, down here we'll take, after almost 100 loss season, we'll take every single win we can take down here. So, no, they've been good, especially in the last week. If you look at the numbers, yes, they're 8-12, which, you know, it's basically everybody's going to be around the 500 level, I would imagine, in the minor leagues. But if you look at their run differential, they're only minus 26, and they've given up less. They've already this year given up four less runs than the Norfolk Tides have. So they're at 137, and Norfolk's at 141. So,
okay.
I mean, yes, they got passes in that first series, but they've rebounded very nicely.
So you heard it here. Jonathan Lee has thrown it down and said, you know what? Knights better than the Norfolk Tides. I like that kind of confidence. And
I'm not going that far.
The numbers are the numbers. That's impressive. No, I mean, really, especially given that this team isn't necessarily built for run prevention. And we're going to probably get to that in the second half of this podcast, getting to the pitching. I think it's a little bit more fun to talk about the offense so far. I guess it always is in Charlotte. But let's kick it off with the guy, as we're recording tonight, going to get his first start this year with the White Sox, back with the organization, completely blistered AAA for the 3 weeks he was there. Danny Mendick, what has happened? I don't know, but I believe it's 8. Homer, I mean, he's crushed it. He's basically been the best player on the team pretty much. I mean, Robbie Grossman had a really hot, like, five-game or so stretch, but really been the best player from the get-go. Is there anything different aside from the fact he's just mashing hell out of the ball? I mean, you know, he's back. He's a 30-year-old guy, so, you know, not, you know, certainly past the sell-by date on the prospect status, but a guy for a White Sox team that cannot hit the ball. You'd think he's got to be able to help. If anything translates at all from Charlotte, he's got to be able to help the White Sox.
You would think so. And home runs in 5 straight games. So it's been really, really impressive. And not only just home runs, but, you know, he's getting the singles, he's getting the doubles, he's playing good defense. So overall, you really can't complain with, I mean, he is who he is. He's not a home run hitter. He's not going to be a power guy. He's just having a really good stretch. Plenty of guys have had, Yermín Mercedes had a really good stretch. Yep. You know what I mean? It's really just about capitalizing on this stretch, and he forced a move. He forced the White Sox to go in and go get him. And this is what the minors are all about. You make yourself be seen, and that's what he's done.
Yeah. And it's tricky because, you know, okay, Mendick comes back. He's not on, obviously not on the 40-man, isn't going to be on the 40-man until he has to be, which is today. And so then you end up risking Zach Remillard, you know, which is sort of like doppelganger Mendick, you know, to, you know, waivers. But that's also the name of this too. These guys are sort of in the 4A spot where it's like, if you get hot if there's an injury, or certainly if you get hot and force your way onto the team, which you would have thought this call maybe came a few days ago, given the fact that the Sox, it seems like they haven't scored pretty much all year. But, I mean, yeah, as you just said, you know, forcing the move at age 30 at a position where the White Sox are fairly covered, if you can call what they have in the major league roster covered, that's impressive. And to do it really in as short a period of time as he did, I mean, really, hats off to the guy, because certainly unexpected.
Yeah, and he's shown that he can obviously play multiple positions, mm-hmm. You know, infield, outfield, and we know he can pitch. So he'll be able to take the ball. If, you know, hopefully that's not, that situation doesn't come up. But I mean, if it comes up, hey, he's an arm who can pitch. He's shown that he can pitch. He struck out a couple of guys down here.
He has
appearances.
He's got that inning against the Norfolk Tides forever. I mean, you know, sure, I guess he got the weird loss because of the guy in second, you know, whatever, but he struck out like top prospects. I mean, you know, we can joke, but, you know, hey, I hope he kept the ball from that game because, geez, that ain't nothing. Yeah, he can't pitch.
He was throwing Eva's pitches. It was great. It was fun to watch. And it's position versatility. So he's able to, like we said, play multiple positions and affect the game in multiple ways. And but once again, he is what he is. He's only going to be what he is. He's not going to be a power guy. You already know what you're getting with Danny Mendick. So when you come up, and he's not going to come in here and be a power guy, but he's going to be a useful bat, hopefully, moving into the future here until everybody can get healthy.
Let's jump to the guy that sort of indirectly, I guess, ends up affected by Mendick moving up. And I'm going to say that's Lenin Sosa, even though those moves didn't come concurrently. A guy who has really crushed it, really beginning in Birmingham, which was sort of unexpected. But in Charlotte, he's managed to pretty much maintain a very, very hot, even power bat. But a guy who just hasn't been able to flip it on at the major league level. And there's reasons for that, and it's not all on him. That is for sure. There's been a lot of jerking around of Lenin. I mean, he certainly got a fairer shot. I can't even say that, because he didn't break camp with the team. He just keeps playing well enough in Charlotte to not play well enough in Chicago. Do you see this? It's still a young enough guy, but do you see this getting solved? Is it just a matter of sometime it clicks for a guy, or maybe for some it never does, and AAA is the peak?
It really he needs to be given a solid chance. And like I said, being moved up and down, baseball is all about routine. And you know that. And if you're not in your routine, if you're getting bounced around from the minors and the majors, and you're staying in a hotel, people don't talk about, we've talked about this before, about the off-field stuff, about moving around and about moving to hotels. All that stuff is going to affect your play, whether it's, you know, in the minors or in the majors. Now, is he more comfortable here? Yeah, probably, because he's been here longer. He knows it.
Yeah.
And when he gets to the majors, he's pressing because it feels like he has to make an impact to stay on the roster. So there's no comfortability for him to be able to just come to Chicago and be who he is as a player. They really need to sit down and say, all right, Lenny, you're going to be here for a month, 2 months, 3 months. Get comfortable here, and we'll see what we can do. And they're not going anywhere. They're not going to win – 70 games, maybe?
No, not close. We're hoping for 60 at this point, Jonathan.
My thing is, why not just leave him there and see what you have with him? Because just moving him around like this, there's no way he can be comfortable and be effective and be the guy you want him to be if you keep moving him around.
Paul DeJong and Nicky Lopez, they don't need to be accruing service time for a team that's going to struggle to win 60 games. And maybe we will see some of these moves as the season goes on, and as, I guess, whatever hope on the South Side is there, I can't imagine there is any, but whatever hope is truly extinguished, maybe we'll start seeing some of those moves. And Sosa, regardless if he does, and other guys down there right now, Deloach, a number of other guys, might say, you know, regardless of what they've done with their opportunity in Charlotte, they might just find themselves at the major league level, because there is nothing to play for this season, not even getting out of last place, as if that really counts for anything. But on the other hand, Lenin should probably be happy he didn't just get traded out of the organization at random like Jose Rodriguez did. So, you know, they must like him a little bit more than that, because they didn't just decide to dump him. By the way, on a better organization and a better team, the Philadelphia Phillies. Funny how he can find a spot there.
I think they definitely I think they definitely see something in him. But once again, it's just you got to give the guy a chance. You got to give this guy a solid chance to perform every day to see what he really has. That's this guy's amateur opinion. So, you know, take it for what it is. But, I mean, I'm not the one obviously making decisions. I'm sitting here in South North Carolina, not on, 35th and Shields. So, you know, it's from everybody's, just give the guy a chance and see what you have with him.
And Jonathan, say what you want, but I would beg you to be. Really, any of us could be there and do a better job, but I got a special enough feeling to say, you know, give Jonathan a shot. White Sox.
Let's give him a chance.
Jeez, man. Yeah, okay. Okay, Chris Getz. Okay, let's shift over. We'll stay in the infield because super hyped guy. Guy who's ready, a guy who has a spot, a guy who's always going to get his reps, providing he can stay healthy, is Colson Montgomery. It hasn't been a gangbuster start to a season. Nothing to overreact to, but what are you seeing in Colson? And does every week that goes by that he's not really clicking make it more likely he might not even see the South Side this year?
As far as he goes, it's really about what is their timeline and how does his timeline match up with their timeline? So I fully expect him to be here for a majority of the season. Mm. I feel like there's no reason to bring him up, but if you're trying to accelerate your timeline into next year, bring him up at the All-Star break. Mm. You're right. He struggled this year. He's had a bunch of 0-for-4s, but he's been great in the field. He's been fantastic in the field.
Okay.
And, you know, he's the prototypical shortstop, you know, 6'2", 6'3", rangy, can make all the plays. He's been great in the field. But he's struggling at the plate, and you know this is something he'll have to work through during the season.
That's good to know because certainly the big question mark is shortstop of the future, you know, where, et cetera, et cetera. And it was not determined, I would say, up maybe to this point that shortstop was his position. And of course, just a few weeks isn't saying that, but just the idea that you're coming away impressed, realizing he is actually adding value to the Knights when he's not even hitting in the field, when you really would have thought going into the season the opposite would be true, I would say is a huge feather for him because I think he was a big question mark and the whole idea like, well, he's got the size, so he'll shift to third base or you know whatever it would have been. It's sort of a relief to know that, you know, at least early going, that, yeah, shortstop is not going to necessarily be beyond the realm for him. That's encouraging.
He's made all the plays at shortstop. You know, whether he has to range to his left or his right, covering second base on double plays, he's been great. So if defense is what they're looking for off the bat, he can step right up and do that. So his bat will come along. Everybody knows his bat will come along. It's just a matter of when. So I would say leave him down here for at least half the season, and then see where you are July.
Yeah. The team maybe we'll have won 20 games by then. All right, shifting now. We're jumping all over the place because we're going from guys who are maybe coddled and babied and a lot of love for them to the ones that are treated rather poorly. Let's talk about one of the latter, and that is Oscar Colas, who really gets jerked around by this organization. Arguably, this time last year, he was, I wouldn't say handed, he won the right field job in spring training and almost immediately had that taken from him. White Sox would say it's because of laggard behavior on the field or maybe with practice habits. It doesn't seem to really pass the eye test there. This year, I believe he came up for a game and he went back to Charlotte. So they certainly are continuing to jerk this guy around. And even if it was warranted, it's like, why would you do this to a guy that you invested fairly heavily in and who, by the way, you know, there's nothing blocking anyone to play pretty much anywhere in the outfield, especially when Luis Robert is, you know, out half or a third of the season each year. So it's wide open. I'm not really sure why you yanked the guy around. He's been, by all accounts, pretty terrific in Charlotte. Pretty much second to Mendick, with the bat. What are you seeing from him? And again, is he a guy who at some point is he going to be able to turn a corner and maybe do something at the major league level instead of just being a AAA All-Star?
Well, I feel like he's going to be the opposite of Sosa when he's actually had a chance and had opportunities and wasn't able to take advantage of those opportunities. Now, is that a situation where, like I said, is it on him? Is it a performance thing? That's for other people to determine. I think that he's playing well enough here. He's not doing anything to, you know, be pushed out of here. I mean, I just feel like it's, once again, it's a numbers game. He's not, unlike Danny Mendick, he's not pushing himself into Chicago.
Yeah.
His play isn't, you know, so outlandish that he's pushing himself, and he's just kind of here and going to the ballpark every day and getting his four at bats and making his plays. You know, he's not, there's nothing that's overly great or overly bad. He's just kind of like here.
Yeah. Yeah. And then it seems like a confusing plan. I know you got to sort of run guys out there and maybe AAA more so, even, you know, double A or anywhere else in the minors, and certainly not at the major league level, where you're just sort of running guys out to see what they can do. You'd think that would be all sorted out by AAA, but I can see why the White Sox would want to know where the guys would fit defensively. It's interesting that Colas, a couple of years ago, was playing primarily center field. He certainly was a right fielder pretty much from start to finish last year. But this year, it seems like he's playing more left field. I think DeLoach, a guy who's played some center and some right, I guess mostly right, he was getting center field assignments ahead of Colas. Seems to now be pushed, at least early season, to left field. It's just interesting. You know, I know it just matters, you know, who you have. But, you know, is there something you've seen Oscar doing defensively, you know, that's sort of made him look more like a left fielder? I mean, we know he's got an arm, so it's odd that he's been thrown in left field when that does seem to be the one spot you wouldn't necessarily put him in the outfield.
Well, I don't think he's a center fielder. I mean, he doesn't have the range for center field. Sure. I think that's pretty obvious. So, I mean, he's got, you know, if you look at his legs, they're tree stumps. So, I mean, you know, he's built incredibly well. Yeah. So it looks to me like I think also what a lot of depends on the dimensions of a particular ballpark. Mm-hmm. Left field is a little more of a tight corner. Then it's a little more wide open. The right field corner in Charlotte, it's kind of a triangle where it's if the ball bounces wrong, you can kind of bounce. So I feel like if you're playing on the left side in left field, it's a little more regular versus playing in the right field where you can bounce around. It's a little more, shall we say, like when you're playing in left field, it just feels like it's more comfortable. It's easier for him because the lines are more regular versus right field, where you have sort of kind of all kind of different angles to deal with. And, you know, playing outfield is all about playing angles. And that's when you're playing against, you know, the walls and the fences, you gotta know the angles.
And maybe the White Sox are looking out for Colas, because no excuses to get deeper into Pedro Grifol's doghouse, because the manager just doesn't seem to like him. So, yeah, miss playing balls in right field where there's more of a ping pong or pinball effect than left. All right, maybe the White Sox are looking out for Oscar, or maybe he won't see this outside all the rest of this year. All right. Last thing, other than other stuff you might want to throw at me about the bats, that I want to bring up is a somewhat odd catching situation in Charlotte. We had Max Stassi, who has gotten hurt to the point where he's on the 60-day IL. I thought from the start he was maybe going to just be shelved all year because the White Sox didn't really need him. He was sort of an insurance policy. Anyhow, he was in a rehab assignment in Charlotte, got hurt, and, you know, now he's gone. There are two catchers there now, Adam Hackenberg, I believe, and Carlos Perez. Maybe there are others. Perez seems to be now shifting, maybe not, well, primarily to first base. I'm not really sure what he's necessarily done to play himself out of the catching situation, aside from being, I would say, what, maybe an average handler, you know, overall. It seemed like he had a little bit better reputation than that coming up through the system. Yeah, what's I mean, not that the White Sox are looking for their next catcher, at least until Edgar Carroll comes and visits you from Birmingham. I know these guys maybe are placeholders to a degree, but seems like an odd situation where, you know, I guess maybe it's just a matter of wanting to get Perez at-bats in every game, and he's not going to catch every game. But what's the catching situation with the Knights?
Well, he hasn't caught at all this year, at least at home.
Oh, okay.
Not at all. So it's been first base or DH every single game. Okay. So it's the rotation right now is Hackenberg and Chucky Robinson.
Oh, Chucky Robinson, of course. Yeah. I forgot Chucky.
You know, a little bit. He hasn't played first. He hasn't caught at all this year. And I thought, find that kind of interesting. But maybe – so this is an opportunity for him to show his versatility and being able to move him around, not only on the base pass, but also in the lineup. Because, you know, he's hitting cleanup one day, he's hitting sixth another day, he's hitting seventh another day. So it's really for him, it's an opportunity for him to show versatility in the lineup and defensively. But yeah, right now it is Hackenberg and it is Robinson, and that's how we're rolling until we get Edgar come up here.
Yeah, and Chucky, geez, forgive me, Chucky, because, you know, he impressed in spring training. He became, I dare say, a bit of a fan favorite. He's certainly a staff favorite with us, and a guy who does have a little taste of the majors. He certainly seems like he can just handle the job. Adam Hackenberg, a younger guy, you know, just might not be ready for the call-up if need be. Carlos Bruce apparently is no longer a catcher, so not really an option there. Chucky is a guy if they need to plug him in. I mean, he's serving the role there where he is sort of like, you know, your prototypical 4A catcher. And when there's an opportunity, you know, he's going to plug in and you know, maybe do all right. And he's going to end up back in, you know, Charlotte. He's going to just, you know, play it out. You know, we've had guys, you know, there are guys in Charlotte every year who are sort of filling that sort of role. But he's a guy that if needed, and again, pending Carroll coming in and assuming he's not going to just zoom up to the south side, he's a guy who has a stopgap and maybe stopgap plus could really do the job, whether, you know, doing it with the Knights now or perhaps even at the White Sox level. He's a nice addition to the team, given that the catching situation in Charlotte's been so strange over the years, mostly with guys who can't really catch. Chucky is a guy who can do that. He basically brings every element of the game to the field. There's not an obvious super huge strength, but also not an obvious weakness.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I think he's a consummate professional catcher. And, you know, he knows how to handle a pitching staff. He knows how to handle, you know, the managers. He knows how to handle all of his teammates. I've talked to him a couple of times. Seems like a good guy. He's the kind of guy you want around if you are developing a culture. He seems like a good guy and a solid guy to have around. And as far as Carlos Perez, if the White Sox want to bring Perez up, they'd already know he can catch. What they're trying to do is see if they can, you know, be versatile and play first base. Or be a DH, you know, for a spot here and there. So they already know you can catch. So as far as he goes, his position is pretty much set. I would like to see him get another chance, but once again, we'll see how that works out. But you're right, Chucky Robinson is the consummate professional.
Yeah. It seems like Andrew Vaughn really misses Charlotte. Seems like he sort of wants to visit again. I don't think the White Sox will do that, but boy, if it was just based on play, well, of course, you'd probably trim about 20 members of the team and you'd have a really crowded bench in Charlotte right now if that was the only basis. But yeah, who knows? I mean, yeah, it doesn't hurt to be versatile. It is interesting, though, that he hasn't played a lick. I guess that's, you know, bully for the Knights. I mean, they got enough catching that they don't need, you know, a catcher to catch. I guess that's something. All right, well, maybe at the end, Jonathan's going to tell me all the guys I missed and who we need to talk about. We're going to take a break now, give Jonathan a chance to sneeze or myself, and we'll be back in a minute to talk a little bit about the pitching side of things and see what else we need to discuss. But hang with us. We're talking more Charlotte Knights baseball here on Sox Pop number 51. Hey there, White Sox fans. My name is Brett Valentini, lucky enough to host a farm podcast once again with Jonathan Lee in Charlotte, talking Charlotte Knights baseball. Thank you for making, accommodating us with more talk about Charlotte. A little less work involved in getting prepared for this one, just a little bit. At some point, we'll just sit down and talk, and you know, the Wi-Fi will work at the ballpark, or you know, whatever, and you know. Or there'll be a new challenge. You'll be on the field next or in the dugout next.
I was thinking about being on the field, but that brings up a whole bunch of different things that we're not going to do.
Yeah, fair enough. We'll just play Where's Jonathan each time. So, okay, this time, you know, outside, inside.
Maybe I'll go from the cages inside. Maybe that'll be the next thing.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I like to travel. I get a little tour. I haven't been to that beautiful, beautiful park in Charlotte yet, which is bad on me. But yeah, so, you know, getting to have these podcasts with you, I sort of feel like I've been. Okay. It's the rougher side of things, I suppose. I guess it always is. Going into the season, boy, I was bright-eyed, bushy-tailed about this Charlotte Knights pitching staff. And, you know, shame on me, fool me a 15th time. The rotation, I guess, I wouldn't say in shambles. And you listen, it's AAA. White Sox need guys. They got nothing, so they need guys. So they're going to decimate the Charlotte rotation. Pretty soon they're going to decimate, it seems, the Barons rotation and not even mess with Charlotte anymore for a while. You got guys still like the Davis Martins of the world, still hurt, still not ready, the Sean Burks. So, I mean, there's a real flux going on with the rotation. Not quite openers four out of five or five out of six games the way it's been over maybe the last couple of years. But the state of the rotation, I mean, do you just sort of show up at the park and say, all right, well, who's it going to be? We'll see what happens at this point, even early in this season.
Yeah, pretty much. When I talk to manager Justin Jersley, I always ask him on a Tuesday, what's your rotation for the week? And it's going to change. Like it changed last week when Brebbia came down and had a quick little inning on Saturday. And look, it was supposed to be Nastrini and Cannon, and they're gone. That's fine. This is what's supposed to happen. And so now you have guys like Chad Kuhl and Woodford and guys like that who are placeholders for the next generation who are coming up from Birmingham, even if they even make it here.
Yeah.
You know, the Kai Bushes, the Eaters, and the Thorpes. So we're kind of in a holding pattern. So it's going to be mix and match. I'm sure they'll sign some guy off the street in a couple of weeks. He'll be starting. So how it is at the AAA level. And that if the White Sox need arms, they're going to go up. They're going to replace them with either independent league guys. We haven't even talked about the independent league guys. So that'll be further on down in maybe July. But right now it's going to be, like I say, it's going to be openers. It's going to be these placeholders who are just here waiting for either the guys that come up from Birmingham or somebody we don't have any who's not on the roster and who will come in and start like a Johnny Cueto situation or like you said, like a Davis Martin situation. Yeah. That's how it is down here.
Yeah. These days, as the Tommy Pham's and Mike Clevengers of the world get nearer and nearer to the South Side, I am not inclined to say a kind word at all about Chris Getz, but one thing I will tip my hat on is that those guys off the street, you know, again, they're sort of free. They're nothing necessarily special, although sometimes you do trip over a Cueto. But you just need to bring those guys in. And for some reason, Rick Hahn had a real aversion to doing that, as if somehow there aren't guys who are always, right now, aren't available to say, hey, you know what, I want that opportunity. And I realized I could maybe get to Chicago as opposed to many other organizations where you're playing AAA. You're just like, this is another year on my resume. Maybe next year I can crack the majors with a team. In Chicago, it's eminently available. So at least he has actually put bodies in uniforms. But that is the last nice thing I'm going to say for the moment about Chris Getz. Give me an assessment. We had our last podcast actually took a look among many other arms, took a look more specifically at Jonathan Cannon and Nick Nastrini, comparing, contrasting a bit. Both guys have barely got a sniff of AAA. Nastrini had an extensive experience at AA, so you could argue, okay, listen, what is there left to prove? He's been now sent back down to Charlotte, not certain what the thinking is, didn't have a good second start, had a pretty darn good first start. Sox need arms, but I guess John Bravia is back, so okay. But at any rate, when you see those two guys, obviously two guys who are good enough to get moved up to the majors, get a start or two in, how do you see them contrasted with one another? Clearly it seems like they're going to get more starts. Maybe Jonathan Cannon may not even leave the South Side. But Nastrini certainly wouldn't seem to be long for Charlotte, whatever it is he may need to work out, or if it's just, okay, you know, he's on the 40-man, let's just rotate guys through to somebody's hurt. How do you see those two similar pitchers, I mean, at least physically, but in terms of maybe their readiness for a major league rotation, do you see any difference between the two?
I would personally like to see Cannon stick around in Chicago. I think I think his upside is better than Nastrini. He's got all the makeup. He's got the physical makeup. He's, what, 6'6", 220? Yeah. So You know, so he's got the number one guy as far as a look. Nestrini, he feels like he's going to be like a two or a three in a starting rotation. So I think I would like to see Cannon stay. Once again, I'm not the guy making the decisions. I think that Cannon has a chance to be really, really good, and Nestrini has a chance to be good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether that's in Chicago or somewhere else, mm-hmm. I think Nestrini, to me, we saw him a lot last year and at the end of the year, so mm-hmm. I have a little more experience with seeing him than seeing Cannon. Cannon just came up, and like I said, had that one start here and moved on to Chicago very quickly. I think Nestrini personally might have a longer career, but I think Cannon might have a more impactful career personally.
Mm-hmm. Well, as we're speaking, he's warming up and getting ready to go in Minnesota, and we'll see how the Twins treat him. Because who knows? He may be getting his bus ticket punched as soon as tomorrow, or hey, he may forge his way into year-long rotation with the White Sox. So there will be opportunities. And so there it is, Jonathan Lee, clearly siding with Team Jonathan there in terms of the Cannon-Nestrini debate. Can't blame him there at all. You already offhand mentioned speaking to him a few times and even heading into the season. Justin Jersley, in terms of how he's handled things, again, he's got, you know, I don't want to say ragtag per se, but I mean, it's definitely a level now more than ever that's in flux. Different guys, a lot of challenges with combining culture, because you're getting guys, you know, like literally like a Robbie Grossman, basically off the street, not signed all, you know, wasn't even playing in a spring training, just got signed very late, then plays for a week, does really well, goes right up, and now, you know, you're filling that spot with someone else. It's a juggling challenge that, not to say any level of the majors is easy, and Pedro Grifols found out for the majors can be a challenge as well. But Justin's got himself, you know, I don't want to say a unique challenge, but it is different, and he seems to be, you know, now starting a second year, he seems to be fulfilling some of the promise of the White Sox, some of the faith they put in him, really managing pretty much every level of the system. What's your read on him and what he's done so far this year?
Yeah, he's been good. And he's a great communicator from what we see from afar. You know, we see him during batting practice. He's a great communicator with his team. The White Sox brought in, he's got a new bench coach, mm-hmm. a new pitching coach. Cam Seitzer is still here, the hitting coach, so a little bit of continuity from last year. But you're right, he's been, I think the talent also is a little bit better than it was last year, so that's helping a little bit. But he's making all the right decisions as far as, well, I shouldn't say all the right decisions, but he's making the once again, the manager at the AAA level is also, a lot of the cues he's taking are from up high. So mm-hmm. The things that he's deciding aren't necessarily his. It's he's being told, you know, from afar or from up high what to do with this guy, what to do with that guy. But in game, he's great. With the team, he's great. Communicating with us, he's great. So I think, once again, he's learning every day. He's learning to be a better AAA mm-hmm. manager. And when we talked to him in the preseason, he said that he learns best by losing and learning from loss. So like we said in the preseason, that he did a lot of learning last year because he did a lot of losing last year.
Yes. And he's
taking those lessons from last year and he's turning them into positives this year. Yeah.
The jokes write themselves, Jonathan. Yes, they do. Yes, master's degree in losing. Justin, would that be okay? Listen, all right, I'm going off the board with a question here because why not? You know, you're going to find I do this with you here and there. Charlie Montoyo is the bench coach in Chicago. It's presumed that when Pedro Grifols is fired, that Charlie Montoyo is the logical candidate because, hey, Jerry Reinsdorf's already paying him. We know how important that is in terms of personnel decisions when it comes to Jerry Reinsdorf. However, he's also paying AAA manager directly or indirectly, Justin Dursley. So what are the odds that you think that, you know, given that he has some rep in the organization, I don't know what his, you know, Getz relationship is.
Right.
I would think that would be plan B, if not plan A. Your thoughts maybe. Clearly he's ready from the standpoint of learning from losing. So in that case, he should be in the majors right now, especially on the south side. But do you think that would be jumping the gun?
Well, I think you have to look at it from his perspective. What's the benefit of him going up there and managing a team that's has a winning percentage of, what, 200?
It may technically be negative. It might technically be negative. It's definitely lower than you would think is possible for a winning percentage, yes.
Right, so maybe it's better for him. And look, if they come to him and say, we want you to manage, of course he's going to say yes. Of course he's going to say yes. But maybe it's better for him to continue to grow here on the AAA level and continue to have big leaguers come down that he can interact with on a daily basis and get that experience so you can take that with him on the next step of his journey. Eventually, they all want to be a manager. Yeah. But right now, maybe the best place for him is to be here for the whole year and learn all, and soak it all in, learn all you can. And, you know, when if they make that call and they want you to come up, okay. But it might be a situation where you're walking into, I think we already know it's going to be a bad situation. But and who's to say that you're going to be the long-term guy if they end up, you know, so maybe
yes,
it could just be, you know, I'm here, let me fulfill my time here, and then we'll see what happens later on. Because sometimes moving up isn't moving up. Sometimes it's moving down,
you know? Case in point, the 2024 Chicago White Sox. Yes.
Nobody is going to pass up a managerial job.
No.
Nobody's going to pass up a head coaching job. But something, you have to look at it like, all right, sometimes, like I said, it might be, the grass might be greener down here than it is up there.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Ricky Renteria was hosed by not one, but both Chicago major league teams. So, you know, yeah, it's not, you know, again, and he's going to say, oh, no, sorry, I'm going to pass on this one because the opportunity is still going to come. Hey, unfortunately, when your number comes up on the roulette wheel, you just got to take it. And unfortunately, if for Dursley, it's this now, yeah, he is probably going to have to take a butt, as Justin Dursley's anger interpreter, Jonathan Lee, says, he would be right to say, you know, I love the opportunity, but let me think about it for the entirety of this year. Consult me about the budget for free agents next year, and maybe in 2025. Maybe in 2025.
Let me give you a for instance.
Okay.
This is moving over to another sport. This is a little Chicago-Charlotte tie-in. The general manager of the Carolina Panthers, Scott Fitterer, last year traded with the Bears to go get that Bryce Young. Great. He traded what ended up being the number one overall pick. He will never be a general manager again because of that one move. He'll be assistant GM, but you got your chance. You messed it up by making one of the worst trades. Maybe we'll see what Bryce Young is. But once again, it's not apples to apples, you know. But it's when you get your chance, you have to be able to take advantage of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, I'm not trying to hype it. Justin, please don't pack your bags or anything. We're we're having fun.
We like it down here.
Okay. That's fair. All right. We'll go with that. Yes. Kevin Stroud, he's beloved in Charlotte now, starting his second year. And hey, listen, winning some games, you know, 400 in Charlotte, or, you know, basically within that shouting distance of 500. Hey, you know, we'll take it any day of the week, especially given the system that the White Sox have, and the tendency, at least sometimes, to bypass AAA entirely. You don't even get a taste or a long taste of some of the very best talent, which is, you know, sort of a bummer. But some guys are coming. You got some Carroll around the corner. You got Thor, Ferriarte. You got some guys. Birmingham is burgeoning. So yes, there definitely will be some guys in Charlotte to bolster that team, and this could be a team that's better than 500 this year, because you get any amount of that talent coming up, and there are guys who are ready, and they are probably going to spring fairly quickly. I mean, that's only going to improve the fortunes of the Charlotte Knights and Justin Jersley's prospects to be the manager of the 2024 or 2025 White Sox. So, again, I won't say it again. Anything I am missing, anyone we need to talk about? I mean, I completely bypassed the bullpen, but, you know, I mean, I don't know if there's anything too notable there. Somebody missed that we need to know about until we speak again in a month or so?
I think we pretty much covered it. I mean, bullpen's been spotty. They've been great up until maybe a week ago when they gave up 5 runs in this last game. Yeah. You know, it happens, whatever. But there's it seems to be, once again, there's a couple of the Lane Ramseys down there. There's a couple of good guys who are, you know, kind of hanging out down there. But I think overall, the pitching staff overall has been lights out better than it was last year. They were just hemorrhaging.
Oh my God,
and if you looked at when the season started, I went to probably 80% of the rosters of the other teams in the MILB at the AAA level, looking for former Charlotte Knights who were here last year on the team. The Yobert Sanchez is, you know, the Laz Rivera's. And, you know, we found them. We found, you know, Nate Mondu's in Sacramento, whatever. I didn't see one guy from the pitching staff last year who was in another organization.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what that means for that person individually or that's excitement on the pitching staff as a whole, but I looked around a lot, and I didn't see one guy who moved on to another place from last year's staff. And I'm not going to say anything more than that, but –
We just saw former Southside Sox writer Platino Perez. He just made his debut in the Mexican League. That's not AAA. That's definitely not AAA. So I mean, case in point, good. That's an interesting search, and I appreciate that research. It confirms probably what we could have guessed, but it's good to know because goodness gracious, yes, that will not happen next year. There is actual talent here, and some of it is going to just get shuttled up by merit or not. Shuttled up to Chicago because you just need those guys. Lane Ramsey is, you know, he's just one, you know, one injury away to get some more time on the South Side, and so on and so on. And again, where some legitimate talent is definitely coming. You can hear the rumbling. It's all the way in Alabama, but you can hear the rumbling. There is some talent that's going to stampede into Charlotte and make second half or maybe even as soon as, you know, next month a lot more exciting, which is when we'll be checking in again with Jonathan Lee. Thank you, Jay Lee, for taking a little bit of time out again to give us a scoop on all the stuff Charlotte. Hey, this is more fun. I'm glad we're talking this year. Last year, it would have been, dead air, sneezing. It would have just been brutal. So, I mean, this is at least more fun to talk about this team because, there's a lot of more arrows pointing upward than maybe in a while, definitely than last year. So glad we timed it this way.
And there's so many good arms who are coming up from Winston and from Kannapolis. Yeah. I'm going up to Kannapolis this week to go see Aldrin Batista again and maybe Seth Keener. There's so many good young arms that are at the A level that will be here in maybe 2 years and be in Chicago maybe 3 years. So there's a lot to like on the minor league level. It's just you've got to have – you have to get through the season on the major league level. I know it's really tough up there. I'm paying attention to it from afar, but there's so many different apples in the cart down here throughout the minors that I don't really have enough time to kind of pay attention day in and day out.
Yeah.
It's really hard to watch bad baseball.
Yes.
So I'll be helping in Kannapolis this week.
Unless you have experience defusing bombs, you do afar is the theme you want. We're not so lucky. We got to be right up against it, pressed against the glass, face frozen in horror as it just gets worse and worse. So, yes, afar recommended. Don't be tempted to get any closer than afar. Stick with that. There's enough to deal with in with the three North Carolina teams and with you and Charlotte there. It's a good
– When it turns around and we see these days, we're gonna come back and we're going to laugh at the 3-18 Chicago
White Sox. Yeah. Yeah. If we live through it, yes, we will have a grand guffaw at what this – abomination has been in 2024. But a good teaser there from Jonathan as well, because it's not to say we're just talking Charlism. Who knows? May squeeze in a little bit of high A, low A, both, all three levels talk. Who knows? But, you know, I may, as much as I can bug him, as much as I can get him set up for podcasts, avoid any allergies, I mean, you know, we're good to talk as often as possible. So hopefully sooner than a month from now, we'll be chatting again, Jonathan. But I appreciate the time now and getting us caught up to speed a bit on Charlotte.
Let's do it from Kannapolis next time.
All right. Sweet. Okay. We've got a date. I love it. Thanks, everybody, for listening. As always, reading. We're trying to give you some very comprehensive nightly. That's 6 nights a week. Nightly minor league updates, which we've done for years at Southside Sox. We're going to continue to do that and also bring you stuff right from those eyes right there on the field, like Jonathan Lee giving us updates on what's going on in the minors, even at AAA, which is like, oh, well, are there any sexy prospects there? Well, there sure are. Or there are guys who you're going to see on the South Side, like him or not. And Danny Mendick, hey, who knows what he's doing or what he's going to do in tonight's game, but, you know, maybe he's up for good as well. Thank you, Jonathan. Thank you, everybody, reading, watching, all that stuff. And we'll be back with John and Lee probably sooner than 1 month's time. But if not, we'll be talking Charlotte in May as well. And until then, thanks for watching and listening.
Thanks, Brett.